welcome to episode 79 of Bad Voltage. We have a special show today because all kinds of reasons. Like we often have scheduling issues because the four of us are quite busy. I'm in England this week, and Brian has become a TV celebrity.
He has without a video rig,
right? Without a video rig. So go if you've got some spare cash, go and support him on that. So what we're going to do is we're going to basically. I'm sat with Langridge right here in his flat, and Jeremy and Brian are going to have a conversation with each other, and each of us are going to talk about a specific topic that the other set, okay? Right?
Yeah.
So why don't you explain?
Okay, so we set a topic for Jeremy and Brian to talk about, they set a topic for us to talk about.
Yeah.
So the topic we've set for them, and they'll explain this in more detail, but the topic we set for them to talk about is basically what happens to your data when you die. What provisions have you made for people to get access to your email accounts, or absolutely for that not to happen?
Right.
Or what?
And for us, they said as the topic that came in a little while ago was about mass surveillance. What do we think about it? How well does it work? What is the public's opinion of it? And also importantly, is this going to transition to the US, and what will the public think about it there as well? So.
Right. So on with the show.
And now, Bad Voltage.
All right, I guess so. Let's just jump right in here. I'll give the question as asked verbatim by Jono and Ack, and then we'll kind of kick things off and start rolling from there. The question was, what should we do, and what have you already done to hand off your data and access to it if you die? Passwords in escrow, nothing at all. Google an active account manager. Do you clean your data before your family get it? Time buy them at all so nobody gets it? And that's all. That's a lot of questions there.
That's a whole hell of a lot of questions. Do you do anything like that? Do you have something in place for when you die for all your digital content?
So I was going to say, I'll start this off by saying this is something that I probably should have thought a lot more about until now, given what we do. I don't know. Do you do anything yet?
Oh, hell yeah.
Previously?
Oh, hell yeah. I actually have a dead man switch. I have a server that I run. One of my servers has a dead man switch on it that I set once a quarter. I don't do it once a month because if I did it once a month, I would forget 1 month and it would accidentally go off. So I do it once a quarter, so once every 3 months. Just like a little – what I set up was I have a custom cron job that runs on my server basically, essentially, once a quarter checks a little file that gets set with basically I set a bit that says I've checked this, and okay, so then it waits another 3 months, and if that doesn't happen, it takes my backups and basically copies them over to a little publicly accessible server, and that backups is all the public stuff, and then it tosses off an email to my wife and a bunch of other people, which is really creepy because if it's quarterly, theoretically, they could be getting an email from me 3 months after I die, which is a very weird thing. But with stuff like, like all of my logins and passwords, just in case, the 401k accounts, the, insurance type stuff, just in case information gets lost and no one can find paperwork, here's just the deluge of garbage that they mean to take care of. So I have something like that set up. I don't update it as often as I should, though.
Well, I was going to say, professionally in this regard, I'm pretty well set up here. But from a personal perspective, I really haven't, like I said, haven't thought about it enough. And it was kind of interesting looking into it because we didn't get, for those of you, I don't know. So obviously we're recording Brian and I and Jono and X separately, and they did the intro. I don't know how much information they gave you in that intro, but it's not like we had these topics a long time ago. We just got them pretty much right before we recorded.
Yeah.
So in the interim, I got to do a little bit of research, and it was interesting to see from a couple different perspectives here how existing companies deal with this and how existing states deal with this, because there's really no federal regulations that I could find there. 21 states recently have kind of stepped up to create some kind of laws or meaningful regulation around how to protect people's digital assets, after they pass away. And just looking at it from the perspective of where we're located, obviously ACT doesn't count here. New York, there's a proposed law, A823, but it hasn't been passed yet. California just recently passed AB69, and Washington has absolutely no legislation, even in the pipeline.
Yep. I don't think Oregon does either. I don't believe so. I don't think so.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant to include that as well. No.
Yeah, I don't think Oregon has any.
Interesting to see. And you would think Oregon and Washington are kind of progressive states. I would have thought especially Oregon because there's so much tech in Portland and stuff that they would have been kind of on the leading edge of that. And to be fair, New York proposed the law. It's been a proposed law actively being debated since 2014. So it's...
actively
not
debated.
Likely to be passed tomorrow.
That is a long-term active debate.
Active in the... I'm sure they're not talking about it regularly.
I like the idea, though, that they're arguing about it for like 2.5 years, though. That's phenomenal to me.
So, and then the other thing I thought was interesting, so Facebook does have a way to designate someone after you pass.
Yeah.
Apple's mindset is actually that it's illegal for anyone to access it, even if you have passed away, which is an interesting stance to take, I think. Google is kind of along the lines of Facebook, so the it seems like even the major tech companies are figuring this out, so less technical companies obviously are going to even have less of this figured out. So I kind of made a list of what I thought I should do personally and will be doing moving forward. And it's, obviously first you get a list of what you want in there, right?
Yeah.
And then you decide what you want done with that. And then comes the kind of complex part is there's no such thing legally in the United States as a digital executor.
Right.
Right. And because the executor does come with a lot of rules and regulations, and it's
tricky. There's a lot of red tape with that.
What an executor can do and can't do, and fiduciary duties and other kind of duties.
There's a lot of different kinds of duties involved there.
Right, there are, and that piece is kind of interesting in this respect. And then you got to store it somewhere very secure, but accessible at the same time, and then try to make it legal if possible, which is difficult depending on where you live. And so the dead man switch is one way. Definitely to approach it. There's some services to approach it. The first thing I should say is definitely don't put this information in your will, because your will becomes a public document when you pass away. Because I've seen people do this, and once it's public, then everyone just has your passwords and other data. Don't do that. That's chaos.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yes. Because I think that's people's gut reaction is, well, God, just put it in the will, and that turns out to be a terrible idea. You can have a document that's referenced in your will, but then that document will not become public. That's fine.
Right.
So it's... The dead man switch, I think, is an interesting approach on it. Obviously, A, that only applies to very technical people.
I can't imagine my parents
setting this up.
And hopefully people who aren't terribly forgetful. I have so many little alarm reminders for me to go reset my dead man switch because I am paranoid. I will forget. I've had it up and running for a while now, and I haven't forgotten yet, obviously. Otherwise, everyone would think I was dead. But it's so far so good. But I'm paranoid that I'm going to forget. And so what I did, and I don't know if this makes sense for most people or not, is literally I'm including almost everything because I'm kind of looking at it from the point of view of how cool would it be to be able to go back in time. You know, when you look at like George Washington, and not that I'm comparing myself to George Washington, but you know, you look at like these historical figures and you think how cool it is to be able to get like their old diaries and stuff, you know, like Thomas Jefferson's diary. It's an amazing historical artifact, even if they're not like really famous people, just being able to read the personal communications, the love letters, everything from like 200 or 300 years ago is just amazing. And so I thought, well, how cool would it be when I go? I mean, you know, if I'm gone, what do I care if this information is available to specific people at least? So then my family gets it and they can decide what to do with it from there. If they think it's valuable to the public, they can just release it all. Cause I mean, what do I care? I don't care if my emails are public, if I'm friggin' dead. But you know, just the same, it's kind of up to the family. So that's kind of the approach I took. Not publicly release, just everything sent to the family.
Well, I think this is something I actually want to talk about on another segment in a future show, but I think fame aside, getting a window into the past is always interesting. So
yeah.
I think it's almost sometimes more interesting to read things from 200 years ago from people that aren't famous.
Just
because you're getting more
shows.
Of a window into daily life, right? George Washington certainly didn't have an average life.
No.
So to get kind of the mindset of just the average person at that time, I think is really fascinating. And as we digitize things, I think we're run the risk, if we don't do things correctly, of losing that in the future.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, a discussion for a future show. We'll have to write that down.
I agree. I don't know. What do you think? I mean,
so if you didn't do the dead man switch, how would you recommend, let's say, someone that isn't technical handle this? Because I noticed there's a couple like digital estate planning firms that do this, but then you're trusting your data to them, and you're not trusting a little bit of data. You're really trusting all of the data.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I'm personally comfortable with that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's way too much. I mean, you know, I'm not comfortable with that at all. I mean, clearly. And I definitely don't want Google having any of that. And I mean, as it is, some of these companies have way too much information about us when we're alive. And
but the ones that are doing it as a service, like Everplan, is kind of the most popular. It would seem to me if you are on the other side of the law on this and looking for a rich cache of data,
are
unlikely to have as good security engineers as Google, and they're going to have more basically all of the data they have is valuable.
All of it.
So they seem like a very high-risk target to put your data there, personally.
You know, I've never really thought about specifically hacking and targeting those sorts of services, but you're right, Jeremy. That would be an incredibly lucrative business proposition for a well-to-do hacker.
That makes me not want to put my data there.
Yeah, right. Like, you can't do that. So I don't really know what to do. I mean, as it is, I've got my server.
So you mean you store it all on a USB key or a drive and put that in a bank lockbox and only give access to, say, your wife in that case? But
so that's one thing I did think about is so a lot of my stuff is up on the server because I have it backed up continually so I don't have to think about it. But I also thought about what if I just put it on a USB key, encrypt it, and then have it so that there's, you know, my wife has the decryption key and she's the only one that has that key and have that stored somewhere also. I mean, that's a lot of moving parts, a lot of possible ways that could go wrong, but at least it would be somewhat secure. It's a really hard one because honestly, the system I have in place is fragile and tenuous, and there's a lot of different ways it could go wrong. And the only reason it works is because I'm extremely nerdy, and no one else it wouldn't work for most people. So I don't really know of a good solution other than, you know, maybe the USB key thing inside of a safe deposit box or buried in the backyard.
That means having to update it very regularly, and I think.
Yeah.
Backing up the key then, and who has access to the key? Because if it's just one person, what if something happens to both of you? And then it was all for naught. So, I mean, the logistics of doing this correctly, as you get into the details, I think are kind of harrowing and really a lot to think about to do it right.
What if you go the USB key route, but don't put it in a lockbox, hide it somewhere, far away with a series of clues. And as soon as you die, have a dead man switch that gets published with the first clue. You post it on Twitter and start up a worldwide treasure hunt to find the Jeremy USB key. That
so you
want to
do like the Reddit
secret
thing
to
where
it
ends up being a safe on an island full of sloths?
Yes, exactly.
Or no, was it Reddit? Cards Against Humanity.
But Cards Against Humanity. But that's just a fantastic idea. Just make it a big game, because then I don't know, then it's like people get to celebrate your passing with the most awesome adventure, and someone who finally gets to it, I don't know, gets the password for your Twitter account.
I mean, it's, and so that gets to another part of their question is, do you clean the data before your family gets it? In your case, you said no.
Nah, I just let them have
it all. But I think that's an interesting question of what do you want people to have access to? You know, do you keep all your email? Are you pretty good about getting rid of email? There's a whole thing about digital hygiene there, that what does get out? What do you want to get out? What do you not care about?
I love the phrase digital hygiene.
Researching the subject is all of the buzzwords that digital asset planning and digital estate management. It's all over the place.
Makes my soul hurt. I don't really know. I mean, I guess it's all. I suppose the real question is, how much of a jerk do you want to be to people who may have had private and confidential communication with you, and B, how do you want to be remembered? Do you want people to remember your lifetime subscription to Midgets Weekly? I mean, is it, you know, how do you want people to remember you? And honestly, once I pass, again, for me, it doesn't matter. I'm gone. I would rather people know every last weirdo detail about the Lunduke's life once I'm gone, because it'll make for a fun story. But again, it's for historical purposes at that point. So I don't know. Personally, I don't really care. As far as I'm concerned, they could include my entire web browsing history. I mean, I don't keep that sort of data around, but if I did, yeah, sure, why not? They could look through and see which days I went to which stupid websites.
And I think that this is another case of kind of professional versus personal, right? Because professionally, you might have had conversations that you want your journalistic integrity to be held up and not yeah. release information that was said.
You don't want to hurt anybody.
And personally, right, and personally is a whole different kind of thing. So I try to silo my emails fairly well as much as I can. Obviously, some people that have them both don't silo them as well as I do and just send random stuff to one or the other.
Yeah, see, I do the same thing. Yeah, my personal email is very different than my more journalism-y emails, so it's not so bad. But even then, I send basically the ideas, if I pass, all of it gets sent to, you know, my wife and a very small handful of other family members. And I'm kind of taking the almost like the Edward Snowden approach, where here's a giant dump, give it to people that you think are going to be good stewards of it, and then hope for the best. That's kind of the way I'm going with it, because then, hey, it's out of my hands. If they want to leak 100% of everything out, you know, hey, I didn't do it. It was someone else. My sister did it.
There you go.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a question. I think I'm interested to hear what the listeners do. Right. So go to community.badvoltage.org. And do you have a plan? Do you not have a plan? Do you just let everything open? Do you have a dead man switch? Do you subscribe to one of these services such as Everplan? Do you keep your passwords in escrow? I mean, is there anyone using that Google Inactivity Manager? Because I have never even heard of that before.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I find it creepy because it's Google and everything they do is creepy. But
when it actually sends an email to the person you denote as your person that says, like, so-and-so said to email you, here's the data they've given you access to.
Yeah, yeah.
But even if you like that plan and you weren't anti-Google as you are, that only covers Google.
It only covers that. And I think
the reality of today's world is your stuff's strewn.
Do you know anybody who uses one of these services or has this sort of contingency plan in place? Because I, as far as I know, I'm the only person, like, in my family and whatnot, or among my immediate circle of friends around here that has anything like this.
For personal stuff, no, I do not personally know of anyone. Like I said, I certainly don't. And it's odd that I have thought about it professionally and have something in place professionally, but it never even dawned on me to do personally. I'm almost a little disappointed in myself, to be honest.
But hey, but you're halfway there.
No, personally, Everplan, from the look of online, it seems like they have a fair amount of clients. I mean, they're reviewed in a whole bunch of different places, and it seemed to be a fairly thriving business. So
someone
uses it.
Yeah.
There's even a couple of companies that offer like a white-labeled service where I think it's for estate planners and other things. It looks like it's them, but it's really this other company. People must be using it.
It would be interesting to find out if Jono or Stuart used them, and if so, which service they used. You know, we definitely wouldn't want that information to be public, because then, of course, a well-to-do hacker could get all of Jono Bacon's information. We wouldn't want that. Wink, wink.
Or they could just look on his porch when he leaves his tax returns out. It's one or the other.
All right, so we have a question.
We do, we do.
How is this going to work? You're going to read this out?
So the other two reprobates have given us the following point for discussion.
Oh, God, right? I'm not looking forward to whatever they've written.
Not too bad, actually, right? Okay. So Jeremy and Brian, they say, both of you are from the UK, where the proliferation of CCTVs have made physical mass surveillance much more prevalent than here in the USA.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on this issue, your opinions on the public's acceptance of this, and do you personally think the perceived benefits outweigh the perceived concerns? As one of you has now bolted on the crowd...
Hey! And yes.
Do you think the United States will follow suit? Presumably... Do we think they'll follow suit with CCTV rather than follow suit and bolting on the crown, at which point I think that ship sailed 300 years ago.
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, mass public surveillance by the NSA or anything like that.
Well, no. So the point they're making is that specifically CCTV, I mean, obviously, the Americans are second to none when it comes to surveilling their own public, possibly illegally.
Leaders and everything.
But not necessarily with video. So the question is, I mean, yes, there is a lot more in the UK than there is in the US.
So why don't we start with, what do we think about it in the UK?
Okay.
What do you think? You live here.
I do live here. And it's basically everywhere. it's there are some useful sides to it.
Yep.
Not just in the UK, but in the US as well. You look at things like the Boston Marathon thing.
Yep.
They managed to identify the perpetrators very, very quickly because of CCTV.
Yep.
And that's obviously the point of it, right? Yes. That's the declared point of it, to be able to do things like that, to be able to track a suspect around, find out, if you know they went and burgled this shop, you can see, you can track them back to where they parked their car,
yes,
possibly where the car got driven from,
yep,
who they met before that. And that is conceptually good, right?
Right.
Leave aside the privacy stuff for a moment, because that's, obviously the enormous mammoth in the room here.
It's also weird not having Brian already jump in.
It is. Quite refreshing.
We could just arguably just sit here and just say, yeah, we don't care about privacy and surveillance, whatever. Man. He's just going to silently explode. but carry on.
Tempting, but no. So leaving aside the privacy issues for the moment,
yes,
the idea of having this kind of panopticon, which you can then go and track individual people through.
Panopticon. Explain what that word means, because I'm pretty sure that
cameras everywhere.
Most of us don't know what that means.
Cameras everywhere, everything being filmed, basically. I think it was originally a kind of Victorian public exhibit sort of a thing, where you go and there were pictures all around it inside a building.
Oh, I know
something.
What you're talking about.
That's a panopticon. Well, I haven't quite got the definition right, but that's the...
Yeah, I know what you're referring to.
It was something that people thought were cool when they first just discovered how to do photographs or whatever.
Yeah.
But the word now sort of generally means you're inside a fishbowl being looked at the whole time.
Yep.
So the idea of having that, having a base of these cameras out there, useful for two things. First of all, it means that you can do the job of policing a major city with fewer resources. Because instead of needing to have a copper on every street corner, you can have 8 coppers in the control room watching all the cameras. And ideally, you can point a Python script at all the cameras and have it detect crimes.
Yep.
And when someone does a crime, you dispatch PC Plod to the location, everyone's winner, après nous, la deluge, right? Obviously, the downside of this is it's quite easy to make findmuslims.py as your second Python script. But we're leaving the privacy stuff aside. So that's one of the reasons, the fact that you can police a larger area with fewer people.
From a resourcing perspective,
yes,
it makes sense.
Yes. Second thing you can do is track someone back from an incident, as I said. So if you see someone get mugged on a street under the cameras, normally you'd be able to see which direction they arrived from, and there'll be another camera there, and you can see where they came from there. You can track them back to when they got out of their car, at which point you can look at the car's number plate, and then you know who they are because you look them up at the DVLA, and so on. So tracking what people did before and after an incident, after the fact. So this is not live, real-time policing. This is essentially being able to reconstruct a crime as if there was a copper standing there watching them do it.
It's admissible evidence as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
which again is a conceptually useful thing to do.
Yeah. I would also go so far as to say it's an actually useful
thing. Yeah. this is the point. It's not like there is no benefit to this.
Mm.
Much as various advocates of stopping this sort of thing would claim that there's no benefit to it at all.
There's clearly benefits.
This is one of the few things where you can properly point at cases where it has helped.
Yeah.
And it would have been much more difficult or impossible to do what the busies did.
Yeah.
Without having this.
Well, the other benefit as well, of course, is that you can get married and have your marriage, your wedding videoed for free as well.
There was a story early on in the invasion of CCTV into the UK, where someone, they took their band, played under a CCTV camera, and then demanded the film.
Yeah, because that's your legal right?
It is. Certainly, I don't know about the US. Here, you are entitled to view CCTV footage of you. You can demand it. They have to give it to you, and they can't charge you more than a tenner.
Right.
Which is nice. There are a couple of exemptions to that, but they're primarily private property.
Right.
So if you came here and brought your drop cam,
yep,
and I were to bare my bum to it in the middle of your living room, I can't then demand the footage from you because you've got the private property exemption.
Yeah, I have a Python script that would...
that would detect that. But you don't... that applies because it's private property and your camera doesn't point off of it. Technically, if the camera you've got watching your front door can also see a bit of the street, you have to register as a data user if it can see the public. Nobody does, but you're supposed to.
Well, to me, this gets into the heart of it is... I try to approach there's these big topics, right, that relate to a perceived benefit or an actual benefit, like mm-hmm. you just went through, and the risks that are associated with that as well.
Yes.
Right? So I think another good example of this is guns in America, right? There is a benefit, there's arguably a benefit to having a weapon for home protection.
Yeah.
I understand that. But then there are the risks that someone's going to go into a school and shoot a bunch of children.
Yes.
And the way I tend to look at it is, you know, on one side you've got people who are typically saying the world will fall down and burn unless we have this thing.
Yeah.
And then the other side is everybody who is coming into contact with this thing is going to abuse it and oppress the society and minorities and whatever else. And my view is part of being in a society is you have to make compromises. And on one hand, you have to make compromises to help society prosper, but you also have to make compromises in terms of individual freedoms, right? So to me, again, the classic example here is gun control. There are some people in America who are of the view that you should not compromise at all with the Second Amendment, right?
Yeah.
That everybody should be able to access guns, and that's just the way it should be. But it's like part of living in a society is you have to make compromises. You shouldn't be selling, you know, certain types of weapons to people. You know, you shouldn't be, you know, that kind of thing. So to me, with CCTV, part of being society is you need to be able to find bad actors and to prosecute them.
Yeah.
And I think CCTV does provide a good purpose there. The problem with this, of course, and with the argument of, you know, some people's argument, and I'm not going to name any names, but I'm assuming Brian's on this side of the fence, is that, and it's a valid point, is that people can abuse that system,
yes,
right? So you can get somebody who's going to come in, particularly in this era of Brexit,
yes,
and target Muslims, and
yes,
that's terrible. But to me, that's the challenge here. There's no perfect answers, and my view broadly with CCTV is, so long as CCTV is used, so long as the people who are accessing it are, you make whatever measures are to make sure that the right kind of people are accessing it, not just anybody can get in there and access it. So long as it's public spaces, right? So long as it's clearly, you know, it's been regularly reviewed, and you know there's as much oversight as possible in making sure that it's safely applied. I have no issue with it. I don't have any issue with CCTV, as long as it's in public spaces and it's has oversight. The privacy issue.
I think that's exactly the problem, though. And yes, there are people who object to the very idea that they can be watched while they're just out in the park with their kids, and they have a point.
Yes,
you know, maybe. But I think there your argument applies. You say the benefit to society is this positive; the deficit to you, that you are uncomfortable with being looked at, specifically that,
yep,
is a genuine proper deficit.
Yep.
But the benefit to society outweighs that, and therefore you have to make that compromise. The issue is that when you say it needs to be properly regulated and we need good laws and all that kind of thing, which is a reasonable thing, but the laws are made by the government.
Yep.
So having a thing and then having a rule which says we'll only use this properly, we've already seen that honoured massively in The Breach, with secret courts and this kind of thing, where they say, yeah, we can take this stuff and not tell you about it,
right,
and do what we want with it.
And
now you've built this massive global camera that points at everybody and records everything that everybody does. Then someone like the new UK government or the new US government comes along who have explicitly demonstrated their desire
and
to point it at people they don't like. And then you think, how can we stop this? Because they can just find the law which says we're not allowed to do this and cross it out. That's what being the government is.
And this is where the notion of a constitution can help, right? is that with a constitution, you can state... The constitution in America is a set of values, essentially, a set of principles, I would argue.
Yeah.
That are obviously read in wildly different ways and bastardized here, there, and everywhere, yeah. and adjusted with amendments. But to me, the way this should work is, using the example of CCTV, is... Imagine, I don't know if this even happened, right? But when the idea of a national CCTV program was put into place, the way it should have worked, in my mind, is that there is a proposal for this, and it outlines how much it's going to cost, how it's going to work, how it's going to be regulated, and then it goes to public review. And people, you know, the general public can feed into that, and based upon the general public's feedback, it should be adjusted and refined. Like, this happens with... I'll give you an example, right? This last weekend... Spent it with the Creative Commons.
Yeah.
And leaders from the Creative Commons are making some adjustments and recommendations for how the community is going to be governed. And that will go into a report because there was a small set of people in the room. And then it goes up for public consultation from the wider community. And yeah. I really like that approach because you get people to lead effectively. And you can only really do that very well with a small group of people.
Yeah.
But then everybody gets to weigh in. And to me, like, that's the way it should work. And that's... So you should be a part of that.
Yeah, but you're describing a world where we... that's not how it works. I mean, yes, ideally, that's how government would work and the consent of the governed and all that. But in practice, it just doesn't happen.
No, but the thing is, though, is that in my mind, you know, there's two questions, right? The one question here is, are we okay with the way it works today? And I think we're both kind of.
Yeah, but yeah, I think both of us would be... near the line, but on the side of, yes, we think the benefits here are probably better.
Outweigh the disadvantages, right?
Yes.
And then there is the how, what's the best way of implementing something like that? Like, so CCTV is not broadly, it's not as widespread in the US.
No.
And I think if...
It's on the trend up. The difference right. between the UK and the US is most of it here is state-controlled. It's explicitly put in... to be police monitoring cameras and so on and so forth. There certainly are plenty of private companies who are doing it, and
yep.
you know, anyone who's got a shop will probably have a camera so they can see kids trying to steal things and run out the door or whatever.
Right.
And the police can requisition the film from those cameras,
yep.
And that stitches it together. But most of it here is state controlled in a way. Most of it in the States is private. That's not the case everywhere. Like I say, New York. Has extensive police CCTV coverage, and they've got a control room with all the screens in it. Presumably, looks like the big room in War Games. Where they can shoot
mountain.
do you know? We want to hear a story about that.
Right? Yeah.
When they did War Games, the people at NORAD watched the film and went, "Their room's really cool. Our room is rubbish. It doesn't look anything like as cool as the one in the film." So they built a new one which looked cool. Because the film had done a really cool NORAD control.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you also know that apparently that movie, everyone thought that it was based on Kevin Mitnick?
Yeah.
And actually wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what happened, I just read a book, The Ghost in the Wires, brilliant book about him and what he did. About Mitnick. It's from his...
Not about Matthew Broderick.
Not about Matthew Broderick, no. As far as I'm concerned, is he had a movie career and then he ran someone over and it stopped. I don't know, something like...
Did he run someone over?
Yeah, like he killed somebody.
Oh!
If I remember right, he like there was a car accident.
He was quite good in that film with Meg Ryan.
What film with Meg Ryan?
There was a film with Meg Ryan. I'm sure that was Matthew Broderick. I'll have to look it up. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but the FBI propagated that Mitnick was responsible for, like, you know, he could go and hack into NORAD and get nuclear weapons, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, beside the point. I have a question that relates to this.
Okay.
We're talking about CCTV within the context of cameras mounted to poles that look at, you know, as you're walking down the street,
yeah.
public areas. But I think it's broader than this, right? Because arguably, we've now got police wearing cameras.
Right, yes.
Right? And then I think there is an interesting question around private cameras. Like, because arguably, you could say government-run cameras will have things like you can request the footage. And
yes.
It is probably going to be operated by an authority with oversight. I have no doubt that the CCTV cameras in England, they've got extensive levels of public oversight
yeah.
and the rest of it. I don't deny that for a second. Whether that's right...
Whether it actually happens
and whether
or
it
not,
works.
Yeah, yeah it's not, but at least the rules are in place.
There's something like that.
For private cameras, if...
Yeah, private cameras, how does that work?
As I understand it, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but if you're... It's a private camera in the sense that it's not owned by the government, but it's filming the public. If you've got one in your shop, you are allowed to go and demand the footage from it.
Interesting.
I believe, because they are regulated by the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office,
right.
who are the people who run the Data Protection Act. And this stuff comes under Data Protection Act stuff.
Right.
So there are... You have to register yourself as a CCTV user with the ICO. When, again, I'm pretty confident that everyone who runs a sweet shop and just went to Amazon and bought some 40 quid camera that they bolted up in the corner and probably ships all their stuff off to camera.com or
right.
whatever, pretty sure they haven't gone through and filled out the form for the ICO, but they're supposed to.
Right. Well, that was going to be my question is, I have no doubt that there's regulations in place around this all over the world,
yeah.
right?
Again, how much are they honoured?
Right.
Probably not.
Because I would have imagined you should put a sign on the wall saying you're being filmed. And I think a lot of people probably don't do that.
Again, you have to do that.
Right. But how many people actually do that?
Yeah, if you're filming people, you are obliged to declare that you're doing so. If it's not clear who's doing the filming, you have to put that on the sign.
Right.
So on and so forth, right? And as far as I'm aware, that applies on private property as well. The private exemption I mentioned earlier is not for shops, it's people in their houses. So it's a domestic exemption.
Right.
If you're running a shop or a library or something like that, and you want to film the punters, the public, who can come in and look at it,
right.
you're allowed to do that, but you have to declare that you're doing it. I believe they're allowed to demand the footage. You have to register with the ICO.
Right.
Again, pretty sure, first of all, most people don't bother.
Yep.
Secondly, I'm sure the ICO would like to have a roaming fleet of CCTV detector vans driving around the country making people register, in the same way that I'm sure the BPI would like everyone who runs a bar to register the fact that they play commercial music,
yeah.
rather than just sticking YouTube on in a thing in the corner. And nobody does, and every now and again, presumably they find someone and throw the book at them, just pour on Courage Les Autres. But I'm not sure it actually works that well. But yeah, in theory you have to do that. Now, the police thing is interesting. Police wearing body cams, because they've just started to bring that in here in Birmingham.
Really?
My city, yes. And the police
I thought that was primarily an American thing. I didn't realise that was happening in England.
They're not only doing it in England. I can't remember whether I read an article in the Birmingham Mail about it, like, 3 weeks ago. And I can't remember whether it was we're starting to do this or we've now decided we're going to do this and it will happen next year or something. But the police here are basically all in favour of it. It astounds me the number of American police forces who are against the idea. And yes, some of them have, you know, they're worried that stuff might be taken out of context or whatever. But you can't avoid the conclusion that they want to do it because it's much harder to beat up suspects when you've got a camera.
You know what, though? I've thought about this. Not a lot, but I've thought about this. And I, from a public safety perspective, I obviously understand the benefits, right?
Yeah.
You know, there is, without a shadow of a doubt, particularly in America, a very deep racial tension, and there is many examples of police going around beating up black people and whatever
yeah.
else, and it's terrible, and something to counter against that is important.
The word "but" better not be roaring towards this
no.
sentence. What you've said there is great. Stop there. Right. Good. Well right. done.
Well, the area where I have consternation about this is I think that when people are doing a job, and there's a camera on them, there's a reasonable likelihood that they're going to be on edge, that they're going to be... Like, imagine if there was a camera on you and you're working all day.
Yeah,
day.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be on edge. You're going to be anxious.
I agree with that entirely. You're worried that you're constantly under surveillance.
Right.
Is that a problem for you, Mr. Policeman?
Well,
now you know how the rest of us feel.
And what worries me about that is I actually think that that will influence potentially good police officers being almost too conservative in certain situations that demand the right kind of attention.
There will be a whole kind of, I must follow the book, even when,
right.
as a sensible copper, there are times when I don't necessarily have to do that.
Right.
And I could just wave it away.
I would say particularly that's risky in America where it's so litigious. Like in England,
yeah.
there's a much more down-to-earth legal system, right? In America,
yes.
it's stupid. In every sense of the word, it's stupid. So on one hand, you know, it would be nice if we could identify the police officers and the ones that are probably a little bit racist,
yeah.
strap cameras onto them. There's not a good way. Or just fire them, right?
Well,
preferably.
Yes.
But What worries me is that adding a camera to someone in some ways
I understand
has that behavioural impact that we don't want.
I understand that behavioural impact. I think being the police is different from being another job. It would make me feel on edge. It would mean that I wasn't prepared to wave things past even if it made sense. I don't have any sense of judgment. I have to follow the book, all that kind of thing. And that would probably make me worse at my job. And it may make the police worse at their job, but the way you fix that, because they're the police, they have the right to use force against members of the public, which nobody else does.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Therefore, they are under stricter scrutiny. They need to be under stricter scrutiny. No. So if the problem is that people following the book makes them worse police officers, then you fix the book. I admit this is a very ivory tower academic way of thinking.
I think that's an academic way of thinking.
But again,
I think people are people. Imagine you've got a police officer, a good person, somebody who's not going to go around beating up people of colour, right? If you've got a good person and you strap a camera to them, I think it will affect their behaviour in a way that may have negative consequences.
Yes, I believe it will. This is like doing a work to rule, basically.
Right.
Puts everyone on a work to rule forever.
Right.
But this is again a benefits and deficits thing.
Yeah, and it is. It is.
And I think, particularly in the US, where there is a big problem with racist police officers.
A very big problem, arguably.
Body cams help to stop that.
Yeah.
Here, as an example, right, ignoring the body cams thing, every uniformed copper has their number on their shoulder.
Yep.
Thing. I don't know what the name of it is.
It's not a shoulder pad, I don't think.
I don't think it's like a
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Fresh from their starring role in Dynasty out on the beach. Right? Not what I meant, but yeah. They got on the shoulder thingy, they've got their number, their individual number, and I think the number of the station.
Of the beast.
The point is they're identifiable, right? And they are not allowed to cover that up or hide it or whatever.
Yeah.
Precisely so, if you see a copper doing something you don't like, you can identify
who
they were.
Down, yeah.
There were some isolated cases of officers in London, in the Met, tearing those things off or putting stuff over the top of them. And you think, there's no good reason for you to want to do that. There are only bad reasons why you'd want to do that. Pack it in.
Right.
So they got the book thrown at them when they got caught, and rightly so. And that's the kind of thing where, again, I think the benefits outweigh the deficits. This is, again, one of the balance things.
But I never thought of this before, but I wonder whether one angle of this could be, and I think this is a stupid idea, but it's just a point of conversation, is... two thoughts. One is that in favour of police cameras is that kind of the behavioural impact of people who are wearing them, of police officers that are wearing them, arguably is probably a transitionary thing. Like, so in 25 years...
It will have been normalised.
And people will be trained within that because, people in the military and elsewhere, and the police is basically the military, but for civilians, essentially.
Oh!
Come on, let's be honest.
Maybe in America... The police here would be extremely annoyed that you think that.
I know they'd be annoyed. But my point is that the police are not massively dissimilar from... They can use force on the general public, right? Blah, 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 blah.
Nightsticks, mine, not tanks, which is what the difference is.
Yeah, I'm not making a direct comparison, but they're somewhat related in some ways. But what I was going to say was... I think part of it is people will just adapt to it. And, you know, part of being in the military is you adapt to very testing conditions. And if wearing a camera and being able to have predictable behaviour when you wear that camera that's in the public good, so be it. So arguably this is not an issue, right? And I believe that the benefits of the cameras outweigh the disadvantages.
Yeah.
But there is also, in my mind, the angle of we should be encouraging the general public to film police action.
Yes.
And currently I believe that in many states that's... illegal, I think.
Get off!
Honestly? I don't know, but I seem to remember that there is something about you're not allowed to film police officers doing police business, and I can't remember...
How is this in any way, A, tenable, B, in keeping with the whole idea of the shining city on a hill that you're meant to be?
Right. So one other angle of this could be that you don't have cameras on police officers, but you build a culture in which you encourage everybody when they see something that is, you know, there's this whole thing everywhere, which is, you know, if you see it, report it, right? Particularly with terrorism.
Yeah.
That if you see something going down, you should be filming it. Now, the downside of that, of course, is that not everybody's got a camera.
First approximation, everybody does have a camera.
Now. Well, you know, in poorer neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know, you might have someone who's got some crappy flip phone, right? Yeah. And it's like, you know, 1 megapixel camera. So it's like,
true.
But, you know, it's just a thought that, like, I think that's part of it, is that we shouldn't just be looking at the police, the cameras attached to police officers.
We
should be encouraging people to film stuff and share when it's crap. Like, there should be an easy way in which you can film a police officer who's beating up a poor black guy and to be able to upload that video. From that, it then turns into a case.
Agreed. Right. I certainly agree with the idea that if the police can film us, we can film the police, certainly. There should be reciprocity here.
Yeah, I agree.
A couple of issues with that. The first one is that it's hard to say you can film the police but can't film everybody else, and as a person who wants to protect his privacy, I don't want to be filmed by the police and the government when I'm walking around, but I don't particularly want to be filmed by everybody else either. Right. My concern with people watching me with cameras when I'm just walking around the park is not limited to the fact that it's Theresa May doing it. I don't particularly want some bloke following me about filming me and my daughter either.
No, I'm talking about... I don't think people should be allowed to just go around filming other people. I'm talking about explicitly people in the service. Police. And I would broaden this out to people in service of the government.
Right.
Government employees, which is police... It's DMV people.
Okay, the educators are going to be a nightmare.
Right.
Because someone's going to say, I'm a nurse. Why are you filming me while I'm eating my sandwich in the park? And you're a government employee.
Right. Well, maybe we slave to man.
Yeah. So, but yeah,
we should.
So that is a thing, and I can see doing that. The idea that we should be able to film the police and do things. However, the flip side of that is if you. It's not flip side, it's a downside. If you film the police doing something and it's a problem, who do you report it to? And the answer is the police. Right?
Well, you report it to a separate body that monitors and assesses police. Your argument here is going to be, they're just the police, aren't they?
My argument here is going to be, yeah, they're just the police.
In which case, you can never, ever monitor anyone in government. If your view is that, then basically the government are always out to get you.
And
I don't share that London view.
I am largely of the opinion that everyone who sets up a body designed to... this is who watches the Watchmen thing, right?
Yeah.
You know? And yes, absolutely, in my experience, if you've... incorrectly fallen foul of some government thing, getting that fixed is really difficult, and they're not inclined to fix it for you. Try getting your name off the no-fly list.
Right, but I mean, I would agree with that when you're talking about Edward Snowden. Right, when you're talking about serious, like, national-related...
Rodney King.
Right.
That was 30 years ago, and they filmed it then. They filmed... coppers beating this guy to death.
I agree.
And they got off. I mean, they were then done with a civil thing.
Right.
Because you've got some kind
weird
end run around the law. Because everyone went, that's ridiculous.
I'm not saying that this isn't a problem. Yeah. I'm just saying that we should strive to something better.
The Brian view of this, I think, would be, and he has a point, you avoid all of these problems by just not setting up the global surveillance panopticon in the first place.
Of course, yeah.
At which point, when we say, you know, the benefits outweigh the deficits,
yeah.
The deficit we're not taking into account in that discussion is the fact that we have to then have all of these conversations. And if you just don't have a national network of CCTV cameras, it doesn't come up. And we're not listing that as enough of a deficit in the deficits column. And he has a point. I think even taking that into account, it's still...
Right.
The benefits still are...
And the other thing as well is...
But it's closer than you'd think.
And where this is difficult, I think, as a decision is the benefits of it, you can't measure them. Like, you can't measure whether, you know, so a national CCTV system, arguably is going to have an impact, particularly as everybody knows it exists in England, for example, that's going to have an influence on public behaviour.
Yes.
But there's no way of measuring it. There's no way of saying this proportion of the public changes their behaviour because CCTV is
in
place.
This many muggings didn't happen. Right. Not this many muggers got caught after doing it, but this many people didn't mug anybody because they were worried about being watched.
And this is where it's difficult. You can't measure the benefits of the system.
Yeah.
You can measure the infractions to a degree, but then you could also argue there's a lot of people who get mugged and no one does anything about it.
Yeah, this is chilling effects, right? You can't measure the chilling effects on criminals, but equally you can't measure the chilling effect on the public.
Right.
And
did we have...
The whole idea that we should... yes, I believe people will gradually come to accept the fact they're watched all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure we necessarily want them to. Remember I mentioned New York earlier, right?
Yep.
The commissioner of New York, this was 3 or 4 years ago, was when he was excitedly describing their control room and saying, yeah, they got all this stuff in the UK. Now we're bringing it here too, because now we can police New York, the greatest city in the world, Big Apple, blah, blah, blah. And he actually said something along the lines of, I'll have to look up the exact quotation, but it was something along the lines of, everyone is just getting used to the idea of being watched. That's just normal for everyone now. And you're like...
Jesus.
And you're like, okay, well, maybe you're right. Maybe we do need to adapt to a world in which this stuff just doesn't happen in order to get the benefits of it. But I'm not sure he ought to be that keen on it.
Yeah. Is there anything we haven't covered in the question?
I don't believe so.
We've been going on for a bit and we should probably wrap it up.
Yes. I do not believe so. We were asked, what are our thoughts on this issue, which we have discussed at length.
I believe so.
Our opinions on the public's acceptance of this, which I believe we've discussed.
Yeah.
Do we personally think the perceived benefits outweigh the perceived concerns?
We talked about that.
Do we think the United States will follow suit? And I think the answer is they're already doing it.
Yes, there is no doubt. And I think, as has been the case in the last, since... frankly, since 9/11, terrorism will be used as the reason. And I actually think that in this Trump land, as Bruce referred to it last night, it's going to become even more of a thing.
Yeah, like, I'll ask yourself, is Trump going to look at the idea of having cameras on every street corner and say, no, we want less of that?
Right, no. Which is ironic because, you know, the Republicans are all about smaller government.
Apparently, not so much.
I gotta say, that was the most American show we've ever done, and it was amazing. It was really good. Like, I truly, truly enjoyed it. Now, here's the thing, everybody. We need to declare a winner here. I don't know if this was explained at the outset, because the introduction was done by our British friends, and they are across the pond right now, and my understanding is they are very, very drunk. So,
almost certainly
so here's
true.
The deal. They did their segment. We gave them their topic, right? They gave me and Jeremy our topic. Now it is up to you to vote on who was better. We didn't really think this through. There's not a plan for this. So we're just going with the general blanket better. Not worried about factual accuracy, entertainment value, anything really. Just simply who wins. We're going to put up a poll over on Twitter. We'll get one set up on the Bad Voltage Twitter account, so you can vote there, or you can go to community.badvoltage.org, and we'll set up a poll there as well, and we'll combine the results all together, and on the next episode, we'll declare a winner, and there will be a prize or punishment for the loser or something. We'll come up with something, yeah. I really don't know. I really don't know what we're going to do. We did not think this through, is what I'm trying to tell everybody. Oh, my God. Have you had a really amazing week, Jeremy?
It's been a week. That amazing seems strongly worded. Have you had an amazing week?
Oh, I've had an amazing week. Yeah. I was on the radio last night. We're recording this on Tuesday here, so I was on the radio on Monday night. And if you're listening to this and it's not yet Friday night, I'm on Coast to Coast AM tonight, or on Friday night, 10 o'clock at night Pacific time. Coast to Coast AM is one of my favorite radio shows of all time. I've listened to it since like the late 80s. But I'm on tonight or this week. So if you get a chance, I think you can listen to it online on the website. Just, you know, do a DuckDuckGo search for it and look it up and, yeah, listen to it. It'll be awesome. That's all I got going on. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. You got anything? You got something? You got cool things going on, right? You got stuff.
Sure. I mean, I'm not on coast to coast, but I have no plug.
That's because I'm on coast to coast. If I weren't on coast to coast, you'd be on coast to coast. Sure. I mean, that's how it works. It's either going to be Ryan or Jeremy at this point.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah. Do we have anything to tell people about? The show in 2 weeks will include all four of us, I'm assuming, which will be fantastic because we can make fun of the British people again to their faces. It's just not fun doing it behind their backs. I don't like it. It makes me feel like it was just like a cheap shot because anyone can make fun of a Brit behind their back. It's just easy to do. But anyway, so 2 weeks from now, it'll be tons of fun. Go over to the forums, go over to the Twitter, vote on the things. Don't vote for Jono. Just don't do that. I implore you. Like I know some of you may be think, oh gosh, I just don't want to vote for Brian. I don't want to vote for Jeremy. They're way too American for me. Yada yada yada. It doesn't matter. You just can't vote for Jono. That is a really, really, really important thing here. If there's anything I've learned from 2, 3, however many years of Bad Voltage we've been doing, it's that under no circumstances should you ever vote for Jono, because he makes people do really weird things. We did one show where he made me put my tongue on his arm. It was a very weird thing. People made the mistake of voting for Jono, and he made people stick their tongue on his body. It's a very weird thing. You can't do that.
That's funny because it's actually true. That's got to be on YouTube somewhere or something for posterity. When you're gone, at least that will be left. You licking Jono's arm.
I bet you if people search around on the internet, they'll find pictures, and they are horrifying pictures. I saw one, and the face I am making is literally the face of a man who is more disgusted than he ever has been in his entire life. And Jono, at the same time, has this look on his face like, ha-ha, he's the most disgusted he's ever been. I win. Which is, yeah, oh my, you can't let him win, guys. Do not vote for Jono. If you can't vote for me or Jeremy, just stay home. Just don't vote. It's like the election we just had. It's okay not to vote because if the options both suck, just ignore the options, right? Right? Is that the way it works?